News, talk, evolved.
WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. You got to know where the post is in some of these songs. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox. Not that this song wasn't played like a billion times over one summer. Listen, I get it. It's still good. Makes you shake. You can hit us on Twitter, too. At C1 McKnight is the Twitter handle. Just got through most of the minor league report. Most of it. We're going to talk with Dane Dunning, who's the high A starter for the Winston-Salem Dash now, formerly of the Kannapolis Intimidators, and man was he intimidating hitters. 26 innings pitched and 33 strikeouts. Let me just finish off one or two more players in this minor league report before we get to Dane. Yeah, I think we can stretch it out some. Michael Kopech has thrown 24 innings, walked 16, and struck out 36. It's kind of like a Nuke LaLoosh thing for Michael Kopech, although I think, again, we talked about this with Yoan Moncada. The strikeouts have been there for Moncada. The walks have been there for Michael Kopech. Everybody knew that these were the things that both of those guys were going to have to work on in the minor league. Granted, they're in different places in their development as prospects, but I think it's in some ways fine, good even, that, yes, here are the issues that baseball player has, and here are the things that coaching staff is working with baseball player on. They're expected, and I think that's a good thing. Certainly better than unexpected things popping up. I was talking with Rick Hahn, actually. That makes me think about it. Right before, I think it was right before Cactus League play started, or if it had just started, maybe it was in the first week or so. And he kind of, you know, I asked, okay, what have been some surprises in camp? And he kind of, I mean, almost bristled. I was like, surprises aren't exactly things we want here in camp. Everything that's come up, we've kind of seen coming, and that's where we'd like things. Surprises, generally speaking, when you're doing his job, not all that great. And really, they kind of have been mostly expected stuff. Danny Hayes has continued to hit the long ball in AAA Charlotte, 26-year-old first and third baseman corner type guy. 236 average, 358 on base, and a 461 slugging. When you consider the batting average, just a lot of power there. 17 walks, 35 strikeouts. So that's been a lot there. 5 home runs. That concludes, I suppose, your minor league report. We'll get into the mailbag and talk about the idea behind calling up Yoan Moncada. And I have a feeling that this will be a two-part conversation on White Sox Weekly, mostly because the date coming up that's of concern is the 15th of May, and we've got one more show before then. And speaking of, I and the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Dave Zaslavsky, who has a title and a name, they're separate. You don't actually meld them together as one thing, but I do sometimes. We're going down Monday to go see the Charlotte Knights play in Indianapolis. Figure it's a decent idea. We've got a car. We can go down there. And you should, too. Go down. The White Sox are off on Monday, so you can go see some of these White Sox prospects play in Indianapolis. It's not all that far away, especially if you live on the south side. I mean, hell, you're getting out of town before anybody else does. So go down. There's a ball game down there, and we're going to go see some prospects, talk to them, and bring it all back for you on White Sox Weekly. And I would imagine that the conversation we'll have a little bit later on in the show about potentially calling up Yoan Moncada will be one that we'll have for at least a week or two, perhaps even longer. Dane Dunning, a guy whose horizon is a little bit farther out, but has been absolutely terrific in low A and now in high A. He'll make his second start in high A tomorrow night. I had a chance to catch up with him literally as we were starting White Sox Weekly. He was headed out to the field to listen to the anthem. The Dash have a doubleheader. There's been a ton of rain down there. They've got a doubleheader again today. So he had a bunch of meetings and stuff with roving instructors. Had a chance to track him down, though. And I talked with Dane. We're here with White Sox starter Dane Dunning, soon to be White Sox starter, right now with the Winston-Salem Dash, making a whole mess out of low A ball before getting called up. Congratulations on getting called up, by the way. And, you know, Dane, if you can, what was working for you in those few innings down there in low A ball that went so well?
Mainly I was just pitching off my fastball, and that's what I do with majority of my starts because, I mean, if you think about hitters, Major League hitter going into the Hall of Fame is batting 3-for-10. He's batting 300. Mm. So I've mainly just been pitching off my fastball and then try to work both sides of the plate. And then you know, mix it a couple off speed here and there just to get him off my fastball, but mainly pound the zone with fastballs. Got to get the head, get quick outs from our team.
Yeah, what are the conversations that you've had with Rovers, with pitching coaches? I mean, the White Sox, whether it's Don Cooper with the major leaguers and all the way through, they seem to have a philosophy of, you know, getting it into the zone and getting it in there often.
Yeah, I mean, that's with any organization. If you talk to any pitching coach, anything, anywhere, it's mainly, get ahead, attack hitters. Because, I mean, if you look at results and stuff like that, I'm not a big data guy, but, I mean, you can just tell from people, like, if you get ahead of the counts, hitters have a much harder time of hitting. So if you get ahead, you attack the zone, you know, locate your pitches, hitters are not going to have a great time at the plate.
So, Dane, now that you're over in the White Sox organization, you get a chance to play alongside your brother, or at least will soon. He's up one more level, but it's got to be pretty decent to have your own brother in the same organization as you're in.
I mean, being in the same organization, it's awesome to play with him. And I'm hoping that, you know, I can keep doing well enough and he does well enough where we can move up and I can somehow either catch him or he gets, you know, I meet him up there hopefully one day in the show or something like that. I mean, it's been my dream. He's 6.5 years older than me, and I always made a joke with him in high school saying I was going to beat him to the show. And never got that opportunity because he made it to the show before I even got my first chance of getting drafted.
Yeah.
So what was camp like with him in camp with you? Did you get a lot of exposure to him then?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, we went and talked in the locker room a bunch, and, I mean, he was always on a different field. But, I mean, we would hang out all the time and would go play golf, and I was just able to pick his brains on certain things and certain situations. And he always talked to me how organizations do stuff because, I mean, mainly every organization is pretty much the same. Like, yeah, they have some philosophies that are different, but majority of the time it's the same thing. You still got to go out there, throw strikes. You still got to compete.
What was the decision?
So give me little pointers.
I got you. What was this decision for you to go to Florida? I'm curious about your time there, and I know that it was, you know, that's a stacked rotation, and I think you were pitching, you know, toward the back end or even in relief some. And I wonder what your transition from that to minor league ball when you first came out was like.
Yeah, so out of high school, obviously the ultimate goal was to get drafted and stuff like that. And, you know, I committed to the University of Florida, which is one of the top programs, especially for pitching. I mean, it's one of the top college programs in all of baseball, like all of college baseball. And so I knew I didn't have a bad choice if I went pro or I went there. Either way, it was going to be, like, a good decision.
Mm-hmm.
So then went there. My sophomore year, I started. I had, like, 14 or 15 starts. I started majority of the year. And I ended up losing my spot, lost my command a little bit, but I lost my spot to a very talented starter named Alex Viedo. And he's actually our Friday night now.
Yeah.
But so last year we had three great starters, outstanding starters, who went the whole year. And so I just kind of fell into the pin. And, I mean, I wasn't mad about it or anything. I was making the best of the situation that I had. I mean, they are in those spots, and I tried to battle for it, and he ended up beating me out, so I can only do is tip my cap for that. And so I went in the bullpen, and, you know, just trying to go out there and put on a good performance for my team. Wasn't trying to do anything else, just trying to get out there and hopefully get a good, like, if I come out of the pen or if I had to start, because I did both. So I was just trying to do the best for my team.
Did you learn anything about yourself as a pitcher throwing in the bullpen like that?
Yeah, I mean, coming out of the pen, you got to have your stuff right then and there. So you kind of learn, what works for you and what doesn't, and stuff like that. So yeah, I'd always go out and, like, I learned how quickly I can get ready, and, you know, how, like, what pitches that I could use to be more effective, like, right out of the pen and stuff like that. So just little things I learn here and there.
Was it difficult to go, you know, because in the pen or out of the bullpen, and I don't know what Florida's philosophy is necessarily, but, you know, they say you can, you know, throw harder, you can kind of let your efficiency kind of go, or not efficiency, but just like you don't have to worry about stamina and staying in a game, you get it loose a little bit. Has kind of dialing that to a starter's mentality been the same difficult? Has it been a more of a transition or less?
I mean, obviously, when you start, you go long in the game. You got to have more endurance. But in my opinion, I go out there, you start, I give it my all. I try to go out there and I punch strikes. I don't try to leave anything, like try to save anything. I don't do anything like that. I try to go out there and attack hitters and everything. And, I mean, out of the pen, it's the same thing. If it's the same game, no matter if you're coming out of the pen, if you're starting, like, you still got to go out there, you got to throw strikes, you got to compete. And that's my mentality if I'm starting or out of the pen.
What's next on your next couple of checklists here now that you've made the transition up one level? What's on Dane Dunning's list of things to do before from the White Sox that you're trying to check off here?
The same thing since the start. Just go out there, compete, you know, attack hitters, pound strike zone, and, you know, hopefully give good performances for my team. I mean, that's really all I need and really all the team needs. It's to go out there and compete and mainly just have fun. I'm not trying to go out there. I mean, I get to play a kid's game for a living. I get to play the sport of baseball and get paid. Like, that's one, I think that's the dream come true right there.
Yeah, that's not a bad hustle, man. Keep it up. Enjoy it. And we'll see you sooner rather than later, I think. Thanks, Dane.
Catch you later.
You got it, man. Dane Dunning, who is starting for the Winston-Salem Dash tomorrow. He has had a good run through the minor league since being acquired in the Adam Eaton trade. Figured we'd get a chance to talk with them. I imagine we'll be talking with a number of the White Sox top prospects in the next few weeks here. It's kind of that prospect time. I mean, now that they've had the season start a little bit later, assignments change a little bit. Now that they're settling in, some of their accomplishments speak a little bit louder than they had a few weeks ago. We'll talk a bit more about one of the top prospects in the Sox system, Yoan Moncada, when we come back. Had a couple of questions from you about him in the mailbag. That's what we'll do next. You can jump in, too. Mailbag's open to the phone line, 312-591-8900. 312-591-8900. Anything that's been on your mind about your White Sox, feel free to chime in. C1 McKnight is the Twitter handle. We pick him up on Twitter, too. I'm Connor. You've got WLS AM 890. This is White Sox Weekly.
You've got mail.
What's in the box?
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Zydeco music, always been a favorite of ours here on the show. That goes all the way back to, Ranji loved Zydeco music. I know that for sure. I mean, the guy could barely get enough of it. In fact, played it in his own Zydeco cover band. Not a lot of people know that. Sox fans, you can join us as the White Sox take on the Minnesota Twins Thursday, May 11th at 7:10 p.m. The first 10,000 fans will receive a free specialty T-shirt presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Bring your business home to Bedford Park and win big. Purchase your tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. This is the mailbag. It's your segment. The whole show is yours. Really, it is. I guess except for the interviews. Those are for the people we're actually interviewing. The rest of the show is for you. 312-591-8900. 312-591-8900. Or you can jump in on Twitter, as many of you have, to join the mailbag segment of the show. At C1 McKnight is how you jump in there. Let me summarize a question that I've gotten both on phone calls and on Twitter many, many different times and many different ways. The question generally goes something like this. When is Yoan Moncada coming up? Fair question. A good one, too, because the guy, I mean, listen, if you were listening to the minor league report, if you missed it, by the way, head to WLSAM.com/White Sox. All the show, the whole thing, it's all podcast there, so you can digest it in its various forms and listen to all of the interviews. You can go back weeks to listen to old interviews that might have been cool. I recommend the Tommy Canley interview we got a couple of weeks ago. He was a very interesting dude. Crazy, but interesting. And he's been performing really well. So with Moncada, the question comes down to, in my mind, and I think in the minds of many others, I'm parsing from a lot of smart people here, two different dates. One would be May 15th. And that's right around the corner. And in case, you know, you've got some questions, and believe me, I get it. I understand that baseball fandom can kind of be had in two ways. You can consume everything about a club and get into all of the prospects and find all of that information and learn everything about the scouting reports and 20-80 scale, that whole deal. Or it can just be like your constant drumbeat of summer. I understand and appreciate that part, too. As a White Sox fan, you are so blessed to have, hashtag blessed, to have a lot of different sources to get as in-depth on some of these young prospects as you want. We can kind of do a little bit of both here on the show, and I guess if it's remedial, I apologize to you, but there are two dates with Yoan Moncada that you got to keep in mind. One is basically the control date. And listen, this is, if it's inside baseball, I understand it. And if it feels a little dirty, I get that too. And if it's all about the Benjamins for you, I understand that. But modern baseball has come to a certain point, and the CBA has gotten to a certain point where it benefits a team, if they've got a real good young player on their hands, to have them for as long as they can, to control that player, to have that player as long as they possibly can. Turns out to be not so great for the player if you've been in the minor leagues or if you've been drafted. It's a little bit different for Yoan Moncada, who signed as an international free agent and has himself set in a way that other top prospects who might be coming up through the draft might not have. Still, if the White Sox make the decision to bring up Yoan Moncada after the 15th, they have him for 7 years and not six. A good friend of mine once said, seven is longer than six. So, with that in mind, obviously that date's right around the corner. That'll be next, not the coming Monday, the next Monday. But another thing you have to keep in mind is this, and that's the Super 2. And I'm sure some of you know what it is, and I apologize if we're going over tread ground here, but I think it's important to kind of reestablish where we're at in terms of this season and the long term. Super 2 essentially works, it's very complicated, and well, it's not very complicated, but it's much more complicated than the next 5 minutes I have to describe it. There, it's essentially this, it's a percentage of players that reach a certain percentage of playing time by X date, and the date kind of moves, it's fluctuating a little bit, but that allows you to hit arbitration one more time, four times instead of three, if you are indeed a Super 2 player. And if your playing time doesn't meet those numbers, that criterion, well, then you hit arbitration three times instead of four. Looks like, and in order to play things safe, I suppose, that call-up date to not be a Super 2, if the White Sox are thinking about that with Yoan Moncada, then that would be sometime after the All-Star break. Now, with the way the White Sox have played, Rick Hahn has made it very clear that despite the fact that the White Sox are a half a game out of the AL Central right now, it's early, no doubt about it, but the fact that they've been playing some pretty good baseball, that they've pitched incredibly well, and that their offense could use an extra bat, or at least some more consistent work out of that lineup, 26th in on-base percentage, 22nd in average, 25th in slugging percentage are the White Sox at this point through the year. Certainly you could use a little bit more consistency from a couple of different ballplayers, although we'll get to it in the news and notes. A couple of these hitters in the White Sox lineup over the last 4 or 5 days really starting to click. So who knows? Maybe you get all of those guys clicking at the same time for a little bit and you're able to make a bit of a run here. We'll see. And again, that'll come up in the news and notes in a bit. But you know, Rick Hahn has made it clear that the performance of a major league team, of this major league team, will not affect the call-up dates for any one particular prospect, Yoan Moncada included. And that's the right thing to do. You can't, the White Sox are in a situation now where the long term is something they've committed to it. And the development of these prospects is so integral, maybe indisposable from the long term, that that's got to be held not above all, but definitely top of mind. So as you wait some for Moncada, and we got to step to the break here in about a minute or so. As you wait for Moncada, remember that. You know, I guess remember kind of the long-term approach to it. I definitely think that the White Sox will look long and hard at the development curve. I know that they'll look long and hard at the development curve of Yoan Moncada and think about what kind of checks he has to put in boxes for his development, what kind of things he has to get better at. Certainly the fact that it seems like the strikeout rate for Moncada has dropped some over the last, I don't know, let's say 2 weeks. But it's not like Moncada there is swing and miss in that game. There's an immense amount of power. There's a ton of natural ability. hitting from both sides, the whole thing. I mean, he's the top prospect in baseball for a pretty good reason. That said, you know, there are still facets of that game to develop. He entered this season with about 200 bats over the A level. And granted, that's, you know, going up quickly, another 100 at-bats so far at Triple-A so far. But I think generally speaking, the brakes can be pumped some. There are a couple other questions in the mailbag that we'll get to here. Some about Nicky Delmonico and Danny Hayes. A couple of questions here and there about the Super 2 deadline itself. Oh, I think we got to that, actually. But the mailbag will roll on. We'll talk with Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago right after the 5 o'clock news. This is WLS AM 890.
Now, White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
You can enjoy guaranteed rate field just like a player. Play catch in the outfield, warm up in the bullpens, visit the dugouts, and much more. You can even give an interview to Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago, I think, if you want. And new for this year, a premier ticket that includes hitting in the batting cage. Oh, that's cool. Join us for Family Field Day on Saturday, June 10th, and support Chicago White Sox charities. To purchase tickets, visit whitesoxcharities.org. True, sir, we talked with Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago, that for White Sox Charities Days, you will be interviewing all the participants just as though you were a beat reporter covering their every move?
Wow, apparently so. I'm not aware of this, but, you know, hey, I'm ready for it. I'm pumped.
I'm going to talk to Bob Grimm. We're going to get that done.
it would be especially cool if it was me interviewing them with Danny Hayes watching in the background.
Oh, so. My God. That would be my everything. That would be absolutely fantastic. You know Dan Hayes. He covers the White Sox at csnchicago.com. You can follow him on Twitter as well, at CSN Hayes. Dan, let's start with, I want to get to this lineup that Ricky Renteria has penciled in for the Sox and Orioles this evening, but let's start with last night. What was the conversation in the clubhouse last night and into this morning about Gabriel Ynoa and what he was able to do against the White Sox? And it just seemed like a really funky game last night. I wonder if that was the sense in the clubhouse afterward.
I mean, it was weird. You get 12 hits and they end up losing. They score two runs despite 12 hits. And, you know, you come out and you really hit the ball hard against Wade Miley, so hard that you knock him out of the game there. And it looks promising at that point when those first four hits. And, I mean, you get a guy that a month ago at AAA gave up 10 hits and 7 runs to the AAA Charlotte Knights. And yet he comes in and dominates the high fastball and just spotted pitches. And, I mean, throwing strikes. And, you know, every time they get in, and they only had about 3 rallies, but every time they get close, the Orioles found a way to kind of wiggle out of it. And, I think there was, you know, guys were not too upset by the fact because they're in the game till the end, but just kind of a befuddling game for sure because, like I said, this guy really got hit around in the minor leagues and yeah. He came out of nowhere to throw a great game.
So this afternoon, or this evening rather, it's a very different looking lineup for the White Sox for Ricky Renteria. I know there was a lot of conversation with him about it. I ran down some of it for everybody who's listening here on WLS AM 890, but just real quickly, and Dan, I apologize because this is all stuff you know. Melky, Lurie, Jose Abreu, Avi, Todd Frazier, Cody Ashe, Tim Anderson, Omar Narvaez, and Yolmer Sanchez are your 1-9. What were your initial impressions to it, and kind of what was Ricky's reasoning behind it?
Well, I like what Melky in the leadoff. I mean, really, you look at this lineup, there's not a prototypical leadoff guy there. Melky does see a lot of pitches. He gets on base a lot. And Renteria said that, hey, he's only get back there one time, most likely, just the first time. But, they want to move Tim Anderson down a little bit to give him a breather. And Anderson likes the leadoff spot. You look at his offensive numbers about the last 11, 12 games. He's hitting .271. His on-base is .315. Obviously, you'd like the on-base to be a little higher. But it's not like he's totally slumping at the plate. But at the same time, they just want him to take a little load off of himself. I think that's why we see him in the 7th spot. And honestly, when you have a couple guys here or there out of lineup, I mean, you're going to get some weird permutations of this lineup at times. We've seen it. We've seen some strange 5 and 6 hitters over the last week. It's just how it is. You've got a lot of guys that are kind of in role spots that they shift around. And we've seen, you know, I think Lurie's batted 5th or 6th once or twice. And It's like, what's that guy doing there? He's a 460 OPS for his career.
And yeah.
I think a lot of it really has to do with Melky moving up and Tim being moved down. And Tim Anderson definitely could use a little bit of taking some pressure off himself.
Ricky Renteria has mentioned a couple of times when we're talking with Dan Hayes, CSN Chicago, that he was you picked the right adjective. I'll use hesitant. I don't know if that's necessarily accurate, but hesitant to move Avisail Garcia up in the lineup. What's been behind that, and do you sense that that hurdle's been jumped?
The other day he talked about it as motivation and potentially not wanting to put him up there and have him get to that spot and struggle and have him go into tailspin. But he used the word motivation. I think he was thinking about it the other way, is when Avi's performing the way he is and he's still hitting fifth or sixth, probably thinking, what do I have to do to get up to that third spot? And you can drive a player that way a little bit too. I mean, I think it's a little bit of the way he had done it is just kind of get him to want more and more and keep him, kind of humble and wanting to prove that he is the guy that they think he is and that he thinks he is. And so, yeah, I do think that hurdle's been crossed a little bit. I mean, you get to that point where he keeps doing it, and at some point you got to trust it and see if it really can work or not. And I'm saying this as they are rolling the tarp out right now. It looks like it's going to clear up on the radar right before game time, but tarp is definitely coming out, and they race the White Sox off the field here for the end of batting practice.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is the worst news you could possibly give a pre and or post game host, but I'll live with it. I'm going to be fine. So Dan, let me ask you this too. What's the conversation with coaches about Cody Ashe? I know there was he was taken out of a ball game the other night. He said his behavior, I guess, wasn't up to standards. You tell me if that's the wrong word, but he addressed it. He was upfront about it. I thought his statement afterward was pretty adamant and honest, and it sounded like Ricky Renteria's acceptance of it was the same, adamant and pretty honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I mean, nobody directly confirmed what it was, but the other night he struck out, the pitch bounced. It was a 2-2 pitch, and it bounced right into Salvador Perez's glove, but you didn't see one even thought of him moving to first base. He just essentially started to walk towards the visiting dugout, which in Kansas City is at third base. And next time it came up, he was removed from the game for a pinch hitter. Matt Davidson came in. And basically he said he didn't live up to White Sox standards. And I think, Rick Renteria took it as a teachable moment for not only Ashe, but for the whole team to say, look, if you don't do what we're going to ask you to do, you are going to pay some consequences for it. And we've heard other players kind of wonder about that. Todd Frazier said it like, hey, if I don't hustle,
yeah, that's right,
what's he going to do? Because there has been this groundwork, this foundation of hustling. We've seen more guys round first base at a high rate this year than probably collectively all time last year. And guys are really taking it seriously. And I think this was a direct result of that. Ashe said it. Look, it was water under the bridge the next day. It wasn't a big deal. I understand exactly what he meant, and I'm going to learn from it. And Renteria basically said the same thing. He didn't expect it to be any kind of hangover. And Ashe came back the next day and actually was able to contribute that two-run double that kind of put the game away early for the White Sox. They took a 5-0 lead. So I think that, probably for the team to see those kind of consequences, it's a good time to pick it, and they'll kind of learn from it.
With a lot of conversation earlier on the show, you weren't here, but we were talking about it with some Sox fans about May 15th and what that means for Yoan Moncada. It saves him a year of service time. And while Moncada, it sounds like, is going to wait until he's ready, until the clocks are right and all that stuff, as well the White Sox should wait. Are there other prospects that the White Sox, may be looking at this point in May? I mean, we're at that point now where you've got a whole solid month of minor league work in. Some guys have debuted pretty well. There are potentially some changes you could make to the 25-man roster. Are you hearing chatter or affirmation of any guys in AAA Charlotte?
Look, I mean, it's possible. Anything's possible. First of all, Moncada is May 15th is because he has a month of service time already. I mean, a lot of these guys, we saw it with Carlos Rodon, it was like April 19th he came up. So getting that seventh year has already been reached for most of these guys. I really think they're, you know, with Moncada, it's going to be more like a, not just the service time, but I mean, Super 2 status might come into play. We saw it with Tim Anderson. So I would think if they're looking at the clock like that, we'd probably be thinking July 15th for Moncada. I mean, realistically, if you're going to, you got a guy that already has the money in his pocket and doesn't need to have a kind of life-changing contract. Tim Anderson, you could see why he would take money early on. He didn't get $31 million like Yoan Moncada.
Right.
It wouldn't stun me to see Yoan Moncada be a guy that wanted to go year to year in arbitration. So having that extra year of not being in arbitration, having, because potentially 4 of 7 years would be arbitration years, that could get pretty expensive by that final season for Yoan Moncada and the White Sox. So I think he's going to be more July. But the thing is, look, the White Sox have talked about not rushing anybody to the major leagues. They really are not planning on doing anything, bringing them up unless guys are ready. And so I think they have more they're geared towards next season. I mean, of course, anything happens this year is great, but at the same time, they're looking at the bigger picture. So it wouldn't surprise me to see most of those prospects come up later in the season, September, July at the earliest, but realistically September, August, stuff like that. They're not going to just fill needs. They're not going to bring up Ronaldo Lopez to fill a spot. So I think it's going to be a little while. I think, you know, I haven't heard the chatter. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen. I mean, it definitely could. But at the same time, I think they really are looking at the big picture and don't want to sacrifice any timelines. And Moncada's been outstanding, but the strikeout rate's still a little bit high. I'm sure they'd love for him to bring that down a little bit more and just slow the game down a tiny bit more and keep making these defensive adjustments that he has. It's been so impressive so far.
Dan, appreciate it as always. We will see you when the White Sox come back into town. Actually, I think we're going to see everybody Monday in Indianapolis as the Charlotte Knights are playing in Indy. So we'll probably see you then.
I'll be on my couch on Monday. I'll see you Tuesday.
Sounds like a plan, man.
All right, take it easy, Connor.
Dan Hayes, csnchicago.com. You can find all his stuff there on the website or just follow him on Twitter at csnhayes. Appreciate him coming on the show. We got to step to a break. We got just a little bit of time left with you before we start the pregame show festivities. The White Sox May ballpark pass is available now, and for just $42, fans can attend all 12 games in May with tickets delivered digitally to your smartphone. Visit whitesox.com/pass for more information or to order yours today. News and notes coming up next. Some of the stuff you may have missed about your White Sox will get you covered. This is WLS AM 890.
White Sox Weekly.
News, notes, stats, and anything else that you missed this week.
Just in case you missed it, we like to keep you up to date with all the fun little stats, the baseball nuance that perhaps you miss in the course of a week of watching your White Sox. This one from last night's ballgame. We are, as far as the WLS White Sox crew can determine, last night was the very first game in baseball's history in which two pitchers with the last name Inoa worked. Gabriel Inoa relieved for the Orioles. Michael Inoa threw for the White Sox. It is definitely the first game with two Inoas pitching and three Garcias in a lineup. The White Sox had Willie, Lurie, and Avisil Garcia all work last night. And it is most definitely the first game with two Inoas, three Garcias, and a Yolmer. The White Sox had Yolmer Sanchez pinch hit in that ballgame, too. Jose Abreu's last 11 games have been just superb. He's 19 of 45, hitting .422, on base at .469, and slugging .822. All four of his home runs have been in those last 11 games. He's hit in 10 of those 11. Walked in a couple where he did not get a hit. Four doubles, a triple, three walks against seven strikeouts. So that number could be adjusted a little bit. He's definitely putting the bat on the ball, though. He has driven in 8. Anthony Swarzak has had a great run to start his 2017. We talked about that a bit with Cat Garcia. He's retired 15 straight. He's on that streak right now. He had already had an 18 batters retired streak. He's faced 46, walked 1, given up 3 hits, and struck out 17. 14 ground balls, 12 fly balls, if you like to keep track of that kind of stuff. He has not allowed the first batter face to reach except for one time. he walked one of the 12 batters that he came out of the bullpen to get, one of the first 12 batters that he came out to face. So impressive stuff from Anthony Swarzak there as well. This note on the Orioles, and it will affect the rest of this series against the Orioles. Zach Britton has been placed back on the disabled list for Buck Showalter's Orioles. So he's been he will not pitch, obviously, in this game. Some forearm tightness for Britton. I suppose that's – you never see want to see a competitor go down, but it's fortunate news for the White Sox because he's incredibly good when he is available and in there. That's the music. We got to get out of here. The pregame show starts in about 5-6 minutes. Sox fans, you can join us as we welcome back White Sox greats on homecoming weekend, Friday, May 26th to Sunday, May 28th, when the White Sox battle the Tigers. Homecoming weekend is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Bring your business home to Bedford Park and win big. To purchase tickets, visit WhiteSox.com. I'm Connor McKnight. Our thanks to Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago, Kat Garcia of WLS, and Dane Dunning of the Winston-Salem Dash, who all hung out with us on the show. Thanks mostly to you for calling, texting, and thanks for listening. White Sox pregame show starts in 5 minutes. Sox and Orioles do battle at Camden Yards. Keep it here. You've got WLS AM 890.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the proud home for White Sox baseball.